You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't pass on the Savage Lovecast.
Victimhood has a perverse and alluring currency on the left and the right. And it can make people do stupid things, like fake a hate crime. Now, I'm not talking about who you think I'm talking about. I haven't tweeted about who you think I'm talking about, or written about who you think I'm talking about, or talked about who you think I'm talking about on this show. When that story first broke, I decided to wait. Not because I didn't think the crime as described couldn't possibly have happened, but because people do file false reports. That is also a thing that happens. So yeah, to be clear, I am not talking about the person you think I'm talking about. The person everyone has been talking about on Twitter and Facebook and Good Morning America and Colbert for weeks. Nope, I'm talking about the gay man in Florida who claimed he'd been abducted by three black men. I'm talking about the lesbian in Nebraska who claimed that three masked men broke into her home and carved anti-gay slurs into her flesh. I'm talking about the gay college student in Wisconsin who claimed a masked man broke into his apartment and put a rope around his neck and attempted to strangle him. Not for being gay, but for being a Republican. Quick aside, the same conservative media outlets now scolding reporters at mainstream outlets for believing the guy you probably thought I was talking about. They didn't wait for the results of the investigation in the case of the gay college Republican who claimed that someone had put a rope around his neck. They pushed that one hard because victimhood has a perverse and alluring currency on the left and the right. All three of these hate crimes, the ones I am talking about, lit up Twitter and Facebook and news broadcasts. There were protests, there were rallies, and all three were faked by the alleged victims. False hate crime reports are a real problem, and not just because every time something like this happens, every time someone falsely reports a hate crime, people are then less likely to believe hate crime reports filed by people who aren't lying, by actual victims. A false hate crime report harms actual victims of hate crimes in the same way that false rape reports harm actual victims of rape. They make it easier for bigots and rapists to get away with their crimes because they make it easier for people to pretend that anti-LGBT violence is a myth and easier for people to refuse to believe women who come forward to report a rape. False hate crime reports do something else, though, too, something we don't talk about, something that if we're going to apply hate crime statutes fairly, we do need to talk about. A false hate crime report is itself a hate crime. When a racist shit stain terrorizes an African-American family by burning a cross on their lawn, the African-American family next door, the African-American family down the street, all the African-American families in town are terrorized too. When an anti-Muslim bigot attacks a woman wearing a hijab, all the Muslims in that community, all the Muslims across the country, if it makes the news, are made to feel unsafe. When a homophobic piece of shit finds a gay guy to beat up, which happened last night in Salt Lake City and there's video, it's not just an attack on that one gay man. That queer person is obviously the immediate and most traumatized victim of that attack, but all members of the queer community are impacted by anti-queer hate crimes. We are all made to feel unsafe, fearful, and threatened. Hate crime statutes, they don't make it extra illegal to punch someone because they're black, queer, or Muslim. For the record, hate crime statutes apply when people are singled out for attack because they're white, straight, or Christian, too. Hate crime statutes, the additional penalties that kick in when hate crime charges are brought, address the impact hate crimes have on whole communities, the damage they do to the fabric of our society, and because there are additional victims, there are additional penalties. So when a queer person makes a false hate crime report, others in the community are impacted. Others in the community are terrorized. The false filer of a false hate crime report victimizes other members of their own community in the same way that someone who commits a violent hate crime does. I remember that Nebraska story in particular, the woman who claimed that three guys broke into her house, tied her up, and carved anti-gay slurs into her arms and stomach. Nebraska isn't a particularly welcoming place for queer people to begin with. And queer Nebraskans told reporters at the time that they were now afraid to leave the house. They thought they would be next. They worried about copycat crimes. So that false report of a hate crime had the same impact on the queer community in Nebraska that an actual hate crime would have had. And if that woman had actually been assaulted, hate crime charges would have been brought against the men who attacked her, in addition to the charges they would have faced for the assault. Charges that took into account the harm these men had done to other members of the queer community. The other people they had terrorized, if they had existed, which they did not. The attackers in Nebraska didn't exist, just like the attackers in Wisconsin in that particular case didn't exist, just like the attackers in Miami in that other case I mentioned didn't exist. These crimes were faked, but the harm done by the false reports was real. So by the logic of hate crime statutes, additional victims, additional penalties, someone who lies about being the victim of a hate crime shouldn't just be charged with making a false statement to the police. They should also be charged with committing a hate crime. All right, coming up on today's show, on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Qs, lots of my As, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads, Dr. Lucy Platt, professor of public health epidemiology, joins me to discuss the health impacts that criminalization of sex work has on sex workers. All that coming up on today's show.
This episode of the Lovecast is brought to you by the good folks at Squarespace. They make it easy to build a beautiful website, blog, or online store. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain.
Want to save money, save the planet, and look good while you're doing it? It doesn't get any better than ThredUp, the largest online consignment and thrift store. Shop over 35,000 brands at up to 90% off estimated retail. Go to thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's thredup.com/savage. thredup.com/savage for an extra 30% off today. Thanks to Roman for supporting the Savage Lovecast. Roman is a men's health company that offers remote online diagnosis for ED and convenient monthly delivery of medication. For a free online visit, go to getroman.com/savage. That's getroman.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 21-year-old lesbian living in the Southeast. I have a question for you about having sex with a really good friend of mine. So I went out with some of my roommates last night and some other friends, and one of my friends, she's been one of my closest friends through all of college, and her and her boyfriend have been together now for a year, but she came out to me as bisexual recently, and there's never been any sexual tension between us before this, even though we have made out before, sort of in like a drunken party situation. Anyway, we both had a lot to drink last night, and I told her if she was ever feeling like exploring the female side of her bisexuality, which she hasn't done before, that she knew where to find me. And her response was essentially, "I'm so glad you said something, because I wanted to say something, but I didn't think you would be into it." So now we're at a stage where she is exploring this with her boyfriend and seeing if there's any sort of accommodation that her and her boyfriend could come to for her, which she seems to think that they can. So my question for you is about my end of things. I am not dating anyone at the moment, so there's nothing complicated in terms of my relationship status. But I just want to know if you have any tips on how to do this without jeopardizing our friendship.
There's no way to do something like this. There's no way to fuck someone, to fuck a friend, to fuck a friend who's got a significant other already, without jeopardizing your friendship. But no risk, no reward. If you don't risk at least jeopardizing the friendship, you won't enjoy the reward of getting into this woman's pants. And you say there's no sexual tension. I do not believe you. If when you two are at a party, you wind up drunkenly making out more than once, there is some sexual pull. There is some sexual tension there, acknowledged or not. Here's the thing. You can lessen the chances of the friendship being destroyed if the sex is bad or things get weird with the boyfriend or someone catches feelings that the other doesn't share, by having a conversation in advance of things getting bad about how you two will behave if things go south in the wrong ways, not in the ways you would like to go south on each other right now, but in a shitty way. And here's what you do. You just say to each other, look, I want to fuck you. You want to fuck me. You have a boyfriend. I'm a single unattached lesbian. There are ways in which we could get burned. I could catch feelings for you and then be hurt if you don't return them. You could catch feelings for me and then your boyfriend can get upset, which would then upset you, which would then upset me. So let's just promise that if things get tense or if things get weird, we are going to remember that we were friends first and we are going to do everything that we can to de-escalate whatever conflicts arise and restore that friendship and remember and recall that friendship as we process whatever conflicts or anxieties or insecurities this thing that we want to do, eat each other's pussies, might unearth. And if you make that kind of commitment in advance, look, if things get shitty, if things get weird, we will power through it and remember that we're friends. You are likelier in the end to power through it and remember that you are friends and be able to return in the end to that friendship. It might not be right away. You might need to take a little break, a little time away from each other, just like exes who broke up. And all of this is just gaming out if it goes badly. It might not go badly. It might go beautifully. You might have an awesome, awesome time. And if everyone out there looked at a potential hookup, a potential relationship, a potential date, a potential play partner and said to themselves, what am I jeopardizing here? What could go wrong? And gamed out what could go wrong and then didn't do anything. No one would ever get laid ever because there's just so many different ways in which a sexual relationship, a romantic and sexual relationship, a hookup, whether it's for an evening or a weekend or a lifetime, can go wrong. So don't let the fear of what ifs, don't let worst case scenario disorder thinking prevent you from having what could be a terrific experience. Just have a conversation in advance of it about the potential pitfalls, about the obvious emotional pitfalls in this particular setup. She has a boyfriend. She's bisexual. She may not be available to you in ways you might like a sex partner to be available to you. Have that convo in advance and you're less likely to fall into those obvious traps. And if you do fall into them, you're more likely to be able to crawl back out of them.
Hey, Dan, longtime listener, big fan of the show. I am a cis straight male calling from SoCal, but I'm actually calling in regards to a friend of mine. He is a gay male living in SoCal, also recently out of college, and he is working at a high school. He really loves his job, but recently he has fallen in love with one of the seniors at the high school, one that's about to graduate, and he keeps everything very professional and wants to keep everything moral. But him and the senior do text, and he has contact with a lot of the kids at school because he's one of the college counselors. And he's trying to keep everything sort of under wraps. He thinks there's a mutual sort of affection, but he obviously is not going to act on it and does not want to act on it. But it is very painful for him to try to suppress his emotions all the time. He's been trying to keep things at bay and, you know, keep things out of his mind and also sort of, I would say just suppress things, but he's having a lot of trouble. And I was just wondering, what kind of advice would you have for someone that is in this type of situation? I've told him maybe he can wait till after he graduates or some other things similar to that. But, you know, he's just in a lot of pain at the moment, basically working with someone that he's in love with and basically can't show affection for at all.
Your friend sounds constitutionally unqualified to be in the position that he is in. He is a high school guidance counselor, a career counselor, a school counselor, and he is in love with one of his charges, with one of these students that he has power over. And it doesn't sound, at least from the details that you shared, as if he's getting any messages from this kid, that this kid has any desire to be with him, no romantic feelings for him. He's just crushing out so hard on this kid, and he's projecting these desires onto this kid and you know, engaged in dickful thinking, hoping that there's something could be possible, and he's in love. He's just got a really intense crush, and your friend is young. He's in college or just out of college. He's pretty close to this kid's age, in actual fact, and that may be clouding his judgment. He may be seeing this kid more as a peer than this kid actually is. But if your friend makes the mistake of hitting on this kid in the next 6 or 7 months while the kid is still a high school senior, or even after the kid graduates and he's out of high school, and it comes out and it causes a scandal, that's a career-ending scandal. I don't think as his friend you should be gaming out how he gets into this kid's pants or worms his way into this kid's affections or what he should do after this kid graduates. I think as a friend what you should be emphasizing is the very serious risk your friend is running here of derailing his career, of having squandered the education he got to get the position that he's got, and really fucking himself in the process. Your friend went to school. I assume he's got some sort of teaching certificate or teaching degree that qualified him to be in the position that he's in now, a position his actions around this student would seem to disqualify him for, particularly if he succumbs to this crush, if he acts on it. Yeah, he is risking blowing up his life personally and professionally because he's got a crush on an 18-year-old kid. We get a lot of crushes over the course of our lives. Rarely does the crush turn into a relationship. Rarely does a relationship turn into a lasting relationship. He is risking a lot because he likes how this kid looks. Maybe he's risking a lot because he likes how this kid talks to him. He enjoys their interactions, that there's some interpersonal connection there. Maybe the kid is really charismatic. But it ain't worth it. It ain't worth the risk. Your friend could not just wind up losing his job. He could wind up in real legal jeopardy. Other parents at this school, if he winds up dating this kid at 19, may accuse him or suspect him of having groomed this kid, this now adult, when he was a minor. And people are just so paranoid about that shit. And he may be viewed as having abused his position, of having groomed this person when he did have power over him. So even if he waits until the kid graduates and he no longer has any institutional authority, no power over this kid, he could still be perceived as having abused his power. And maybe that's fair and maybe that's unfair, but it is still a likely career ender. That's what you as a friend should be emphasizing to him. Raise your hand if you love going to the mall to shop for clothes. I don't have my hand up. I don't think very many of you have your hands up either. I have a suggestion and a solution for you, a very cool company called ThredUp. With ThredUp, you save money, you save the planet, and you get some sweet threads. ThredUp is the largest online consignment and thrift store where you can shop for high-quality pieces for up to 90% off estimated retail. They have over 35,000 brands ranging from Gap to Gucci. You can find a Coach purse for $10, Anthropologie dress for $6, and Lululemon tank for $10. Plus, if you go to ThredUp.com/savage today, you get an extra 30% off your first order. Instead of digging through clothing racks, ThredUp provides the comfort of shopping online with the insane deals of thrifting. It's super easy and fun to shop. You can save your sizes and favorite brands and filter for exactly what you are looking for and for exactly what you want. They have so many cute things and add thousands of new items every day. Look good and do good. What's that saying? Reduce, reuse, recycle. You will be recycling and reusing by going to ThredUp. Go to ThredUp.com/Savage for an extra 30% off your first order. That's ThredUp.com/Savage. ThredUp.com/Savage for an extra 30% off today. Terms apply.
Hi, Dan. I am a 30-year-old woman married in a heterosexual monogamous relationship on the East Coast and found out that my husband has been cheating on me. For a little bit of background, we've been married a month, but I am 8 months pregnant. And about 9 months ago, he had 4 one-night stands. It was before I was pregnant, before we moved in together, before we got married. And then he had a threesome with a couple on my 30th birthday. I was in Iceland. He had planned it out over several months with this couple, was talking to them. We're in a mostly monogamous relationship. That's what we both agreed to. Although I've been very GGG, we've gone to sex clubs and like had other people join us in our relationship. And although the line was that he was not to have sex with other women and definitely not without me, not without talking to me about it. Like I said, he did it on my birthday. Well, I was on a birthday trip and then texted me like it was like nothing had happened. He didn't confess. I had to find this out on my own. Needless to say, I've been devastated ever since. I'm questioning my marriage and this baby and our relationship, which was otherwise an amazing, healthy relationship with great communication.
Yeah.
It's made me feel sick to my stomach. It's harmed the pregnancy because I've been unable to eat or sleep or drink. And I just don't know where to go from here. I don't know. Do I stay with someone that's cheated on me 5 times despite me being open and kinky? And or do I leave? Like, I feel everyone is telling me I'm stupid if I stay.
The first thing I want to tell you is to please eat, drink, and try to sleep. You need to take care of yourself. You need to take care of your fetus, the fetus that you carry. You also need to take care of yourself. You're headed toward childbirth, which is incredibly physically and emotionally taxing. And you need to take care of yourself. Eat, drink, sleep. And you need to take care of this kid that you're about to have by eating and drinking and trying to sleep too. All right, on to your cheating piece of shit husband, your CPOS husband, your needlessly CPOSing husband. You guys didn't have a monogamous relationship. You had a mostly monogamous relationship, and he didn't need to cheat on you to have some sexual adventure, to have some outside sexual contact. He could have talked to you about these things, processed these things. And if he had included you in these adventures, they wouldn't have been violations. They wouldn't have you sitting at home, unable to eat, drink, or sleep a month before you're supposed to give birth to the child you created with this person. But he did none of those things. So what do you do? Everyone's telling you to leave. I'm inclined to tell you to leave. If you're a listener, and presumably you are, you didn't call me at random and leave that message on some random guy's phone number. You've heard me talk about the hand job on the business trip at 20 years versus the fucking your sister on your wedding night. That, you know, if somebody been together 10, 15, 20 years, it's been a good and loving relationship, and that person hooked up on a business trip, maybe got a hand job from a masseuse, that's something that I think a loving monogamous couple should be able to forgive and get past. Fucking your sister on your wedding night? Probably not something that you can forgive and get past. That is such a scalding violation. It is such a betrayal of everything your relationship was purportedly about, especially at that stage, your fucking wedding night. But yeah, I understand. You know, I think if somebody cheats on you once and they never do it again and they regret it and you have a monogamous commitment, that one incident shouldn't blow the relationship up. They should be able to forgive and get past it. If the incident is closer to the hand job from the masseuse end of the spectrum and far from the fucking your sister on your wedding night end of the spectrum, and everything that your husband did early in your relationship and on your birthday really falls pretty close to the fucking your sister on your wedding night end of the spectrum and will be hard to forgive. What you have to balance here is whether it's in your own self-interest to forgive him. You need to ask yourself not what you should do, not what he should suffer, but what you want. Do you want to be with him? Do you want to parent with him? Do you want to parent under the same roof with him? Obviously, he doesn't like rules. Obviously, having an agreement with you that allows for outside sexual contact when you're there together or when you're fully informed and you have buy-in and you give him permission, that some part of his erotic imagination, that's not exciting enough. Some part of his erotic imagination requires the violation, the cheating, the lying, and the deceit. Being with him means signing up for those things. There will be more incidents like these over the course of your marriage. How do you feel about that? Is that something, if it was okay, if it was understood, if you allowed for him sometimes dinking off secretly and having a liaison and then coming back and maybe telling you about it a few months later or never telling you about it at all? Could that be fun and exciting, just like the sexual adventures that you two had together were fun and exciting? If yes, if you could see yourself getting there, maybe you could stay with him. If no, then you need to end this marriage because he is going to keep at this, and it is going to, if it this sort of thing, if these kinds of betrayals will always be experienced as betrayals and as violations and as a crisis in your marriage, then you need to leave him because it is going to keep happening. I sometimes feel like Maya Angelou is my co-pilot on the show because I cite her so often. When someone shows you who they are the first time, believe them. He's shown you who he is. Now you know him for exactly who he is sexually. He can't be faithful. He can't even be faithful in the context of a mostly monogamous relationship where he can get with other people with his partner's consent. If you can live with that, maybe you can live with him. If you can't live with that, you can't live with him. Guys are terrible at taking care of their health, whether it's a knee injury, a bad back, or something worse. Guys are usually more comfortable rubbing some dirt on it than going to see a doctor. I am guilty of this myself. I tore my rotator cuff last year, and I put off the surgery for months and months and months because I was too busy doing dumb guy things to take care of myself. Guys have the same problem around taking care of themselves when it comes to erectile dysfunction. Studies show 70% of guys who experience ED don't get treated for it. Thankfully, Roman created an easy way to get checked out by a doctor and get treated for ED online. Roman is a one-stop men's health company where licensed U.S. physicians can diagnose ED and ship medication right to your door in a convenient monthly delivery. With Roman, there are no waiting rooms, no awkward face-to-face conversations about your boners, or uncomfortable trips to the pharmacy. You can handle everything discreetly online. All you got to do is visit GetRoman.com/savage, fill out a brief medical onboarding, chat with a doctor, and get FDA-approved ED meds delivered to your door in discreet, unmarked packaging. Guys, go online and get checked by the doctor. Erectile dysfunction is a problem that guys don't tackle, but it is a problem that can be tackled. And with Roman, it is really easy. So take care of it. Take care of yourself. For a free online visit, go to GetRoman.com/savage. That's GetRoman.com/savage for that free online visit. GetRoman.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. My partner and I have had an open relationship since day one. Since then, we've moved in together. Our children all get along, and we live in really happy, healthy household with a really beautiful relationship. He's in his 40s, and I'm in my 20s, and we're both openly bisexual. We mutually agreed that open, not poly, is a way for us, and we couldn't imagine it any other way. But then we got HIV. As you can imagine, it was devastating, not only for obvious reasons, but more so because we were so used to the freedom that we had before playing in group or apart. It's been a rough few months, but we have been talking about getting back in the lifestyle, but a lot of people don't understand the U equals U concept. Undetectable means untransmittable. We're happy with the normal monogamy thing, but we still want to explore with others, just like we did before, but the rejection of those who don't understand is, for lack of a better word, kind of lame. I just wanted to hear your input, or if you have any advice for ways that we can talk to people about it openly without scaring them off. We're very open about it. Again, we don't hide it from anyone. We make sure that that's understood. But it seems like everyone kind of, they say they understand, but they kind of don't ever text back. I was hoping you could shed some light on this and also put out the word out there that just because we have HIV doesn't mean that we're scarred or damaged goods.
People get upset at me when I give this piece of advice, this one word piece of advice that is applicable in so many different contexts for so many different callers with so many different questions. Move. You could move. You could move your family. It might be difficult. You have kids. You put down roots. You live in Texas. It might be difficult to pull up stakes, but if you lived in a community that had a better understanding of HIV, if you lived and swung in a place like San Francisco or Portland or Seattle or Los Angeles or Chicago or New York, you might encounter less ignorance. Undetectable is uninfectious. Somebody who knows themselves to be HIV positive and is in treatment and is taking their meds and is compliant and has gone to the doctor and has undetectable viral load, they are not capable of infecting someone with HIV. If you and your partner are, as most swingers do, most open people do, using condoms with other partners to protect yourselves and them from other sexually transmitted infections, your chances of giving them HIV go from non-existent to double super extra backflip non-existent. You are just not a risk. Your partners are at greater risk from people who believe themselves to be negative who may not be negative when it comes to HIV. And a lot of people don't understand that. A lot of gay people don't understand that. You know, I just said move to a place where there's more understanding about HIV. A lot of those places where people have a better understanding about HIV and about undetectable equals uninfectious have more gay people in them. But I still hear from gay people who are HIV positive and have undetectable viral loads and therefore are uninfectious, cannot transmit the virus, that they sometimes get shot down or frequently get shot down when they're open about their HIV status with potential hookups. So if gay guys are hearing that from other gay guys, ignorant gay guys, in a place like San Francisco or Chicago or New York, your odds of hearing that from straight or bi folks living in Texas are infinitely higher. Which brings me back to move, but move isn't always practical. So I would encourage you to do what you encourage me to do, to educate people, to keep talking, to keep telling people the truth about yourselves, that you guys are pos, and the truth about undetectable. That's, if someone is undetectable, they are not going to infect you with HIV. If you use a condom, they're not going to infect you with gonorrhea or syphilis either. But certainly not going to infect you with HIV, even if you don't use a condom. I do think people should use condoms with rando partners, even if HIV isn't a consideration, but everyone gets to make up their own minds. Do what you encourage me to do. Educate people. And this is one of those sorting hat moments where you tell someone something about you, one thing about you, and their reaction tells you everything you need to know about them. You probably don't want to be with people who are so crippled by HIV anxiety and fear and ignorance that they couldn't relax, even if they grokked, even if they got it through their head that you guys can't infect them if they're just a nervous wreck because there's an HIV positive person in the room with an undetectable viral load and they can't relax and enjoy the sex, or they're a tense wreck about it afterwards. You're not going to enjoy those encounters. So those people who ghost on you, who stop responding to your texts, who disappear, probably not people you wanted to go to bed with anyway. So you're going to have to cast a wider net. Maybe you should look for partners in other places. You guys can go see couples in other cities if your parents or your partner's parents can come and look after the kids while you guys move to San Francisco just for 36 hours, just for a weekend. You can have those outside sexual encounters. You can have those sexual adventures together. Still, if you can swing it, if you can afford it, to move to San Francisco or Seattle or Portland, Chicago or New York for a weekend. I wouldn't encourage you to lie to people. There are risks when it comes to lying to people about HIV. Many states have laws that criminalize not telling someone you're HIV positive before you have sex with them, even if you're undetectable, even if you use a condom on top of being undetectable. And you don't want to run that risk. You don't want someone that you slept with to find out after the fact that you're positive and run to the police and blow your lives up in that way. So I encourage you to keep being honest. And hopefully in time, because I'm educating people, because you're educating people, you'll encounter more educated couples, not just in San Francisco, not just in Portland and Seattle, Chicago, New York, but in Texas too. Good luck and good on you guys for being honest and being open and being responsible.
I am a very busy, very powerful, very important woman. So when the time comes to build my website, am I going to go take a class to learn how to code or whatever it takes to make websites or read some book about it? Of course not. I told you already, I don't have time for this. Fortunately, Squarespace makes it a breeze to crank out beautiful, professional-looking website, blogs, or even an online store. They have templates that were created by world-class designers, so you can just drop it in and it looks great right away. And they have built-in e-commerce so you can sell stuff. There's nothing to patch or upgrade, and if you need help, they have 24/7 support, so you can make it yourself so easily and make it stand out with Squarespace. True story, I'm in a band, I am, and Lane built our website like nothing, like it was the easiest thing ever. And guess what he used to build? He used Squarespace! And you can too. Head on over to squarespace.com/savage for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, Use the offer code SAVAGE to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. That's squarespace.com/savage and use the offer code SAVAGE.
Hi, Dan and the Tech Savvy at-risk youth. I am a 26-year-old transgendered woman in Los Angeles, California, living a beautiful little life. I am an escort, and I have this new sugar daddy who I've never really had a sugar daddy before. I've only ever had clients. And the thing is, I have HIV, and I don't tell my clients that I have HIV because, as you and I both know, HIV is manageable, and I always use condoms and everything's safe. And I'm just, it's definitely unethical, as many would say, but I just want to begin this conversation, I guess, because I don't hear anyone talk about this, that some of us who do this kind of work have HIV and don't disclose it to our clients because their life will change in no way. You know, like, I'm never going to give it to someone. No one's ever going to contract it from me because I take my medication and we use condoms and all of the things, all of the safeguards are in place, right? But so my sugar daddy wants to take me on a trip and he doesn't know that I have HIV because I'm not fucking going to tell him that because I don't want to fuck up my income. That's the real bad part. We can't fuck up my income. But so I just want to like start this conversation or ask like, how evil am I or am I the future?
You're not evil. I certainly don't think you're evil. You're taking your meds. You're using condoms with your clients. You are putting them at zero risk of contracting HIV. You have an undetectable viral load. You are not infectious. You are using condoms on top of that. You are double backflip, not infectious when it comes to HIV, and you're protecting your clients from other sexually transmitted infections as well. Good on you. Is what you're doing ethical? Are you the future? Well, perhaps you are the future. Perhaps a time is coming when everyone understands that an undetectable viral load, if somebody is on their meds, means that that person can't infect you with HIV. And if they're using a condom on top of that, they double backflip, can't infect you with HIV. So they aren't under any obligation to disclose their HIV status to you. That's an entirely private matter because it impacts you not at all. That might be the future, but right now we live in the present. And as I said to the previous caller, a lot of states criminalize the failure to disclose your HIV status. There are men, mostly men, probably some trans women also, in prison in this country for the failure to disclose their HIV status to a partner. And there have been prosecutions of people who failed to disclose their HIV status, even though they used a condom. Prosecutions of men who were the passive partner in anal intercourse, they were the penetrated one in a situation where a condom was used, and they were prosecuted because of the fear and the shame and the stigma and the ignorance. So are you the future? Is there a time coming when everyone has access to healthcare, when everyone who has HIV is in treatment, when HIV is on its way out, on its last legs, because people who have HIV are have access to the meds, are taking their meds, have primary care physicians who look after them, and people who don't have HIV have access to PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, Truvada, so they aren't at risk of contracting HIV if they wind up in bed with somebody who doesn't know they have HIV and therefore isn't on their meds and therefore isn't undetectable. Is that the future? Perhaps it is. Perhaps that day is coming. That day has not yet arrived. So I'm concerned for you. I'm concerned for the risk that you are running, for the danger that you're placing yourself in. Legally, if somebody that you see, who's a regular client, finds out you're positive and goes to the police, you're a trans woman working as an escort. I don't have to tell you that you're already at risk for violence at the hands of angry clients potentially, but also state violence as a trans woman, as a positive person, and as an escort. You're under triple threats there. So the glib answer is to tell you just to disclose. But if disclosing means impoverishment, you have a huge incentive not to disclose. And that incentive not to disclose, coupled with the fact that you're undetectable and using condoms and therefore putting no one at risk of contracting HIV, I can certainly understand why, adding those things up, you would conclude not only is it in your best interest financially not to disclose, but you're under no moral obligation to disclose. But the sad reality is you're under a legal obligation, depending on where you live, to disclose. As for this trip with your sugar daddy, I assume the risk here is that if you travel with him, he is going to see you take your meds or spot your meds. The temptation may be to go off your meds on a trip. Please do not do that, because going off your meds can cause, as I'm sure you're aware, your viral load to spike, and then you become potentially not infectious anymore. So I would, if you wish to continue as you are, not go on that trip. If the risk of exposure here is tied to that trip, the intimacy of that trip, being in the same hotel room, all of your toiletries being laid out, or the bottle of pills being in your bag somewhere, or him seeing the pill and then Googling it, don't go on the trip if you don't want to have to disclose, if you don't want to get found out. Don't go on the trip.
Hey, Dan. So I'm 25 years old, and I recently had a somewhat nasty situation with my now ex-boyfriend that caused my dad to say to me, and my dad is 70 approximately, he says, "Dump the motherfucker already." And I thought, this is just a totally normal phrase that people say, because I hear him say it all the time, and I hear you say it all the time. And then he says, "Do you know where that phrase comes from?" And I was like, I thought that was just a normal phrase. And he says, "I got it from this guy, Dan Savage, who wrote this relationship column I used to read all the time. And I like think he gives great advice." And I, who had found the podcast without any help from my dad, just had my mind completely blown. So I wanted to call and thank you for giving kick-ass relationship advice to two generations of my family and hopefully making us all much better partners.
That is a sweet story that makes me feel so old. I have been writing Savage Love for almost 30 years. I get letters now from people whose parents were taking my advice before they were born. That freaks me out. The numbers of conceptions I may have played even some small role in particularly freaks me out, but I want to give a shout out to your dad. You can let him know I still write that column, Savage Love. You can find it online, find it at thestranger.com and other weekly newspapers all over the country and the world. And if you give us a call back and give me your dad's name and an address, I will send him a signed book to thank him for reading the column back in the day. And I'll send you one too to thank you for listening to the Lovecast here in this day.
Hey, Dan, longtime listener, 33-year-old, bi guy, central United States-ish. Been sleeping with a guy randomly here and there, super closet case, and he recently just texted me, "I'm dating someone now, but I want you to know the last time we had sex, my stomach started hurting, and it hasn't stopped. I have to get a colonoscopy now because of the pain." Don't know what that means. I said, "Wow, sorry to hear that. I hope everything is okay. We were pretty deep in that ass. Will you keep me posted?" Haven't heard back. He deletes his number from time to time. Can't get a hold of him. Disappears. Don't really know how to handle that any further. But we've been together numerous times. Every time afterwards, he deletes his number, deletes his phone, deletes his kick. Can't get a hold of him. Just curious how I should proceed.
I think you proceed with the assumption that this was a coincidence and that this guy, by evidence of his shame-driven behaviors, that he contacts you when he's horny for the dude-on-dude sex and then disappears and deletes numbers and blocks things and deletes his kick account in between those moments when he really has to have the dick, that he's attached meaning to what was probably a coincidence. You guys had butt sex. You've had butt sex before. He came down with some gut issue after you two had butt sex, after you were really deep in that ass. And those two phenomena were actually unrelated. You've had plenty of butt sex with him before. He's probably had butt sex with other guys. And his gut issue number came up shortly after he had butt sex. That's not proof the butt sex was the cause of the gut issue. And I think you just have to shrug this off. This person that you like to have sex with, who's clearly, it seems, having sex with you from a place of shame and desperation and need, has disappeared on you again. And perhaps blames you because you were deep in his guts. You were way up there. You were giving him a deep dicking, which is what he wanted. And then he came down with something. And like a lot of people who struggle with internalized homophobia and sex shame and kink shame, He thought, oh my God, I'm finally being punished for the sex that I shouldn't be having in the first place. Ah, God was watching me that day, and now I have to go get a colonoscopy. I've had a lot of butt sex in my time. I know a lot of people who have and have had a lot of butt sex. No one that I know personally has ever come to me, and the people who are my friends, we talk about our sex lives, we talk about our sex problems together a lot. No one has ever come to me and said, oh my God, I got such a deep dicking that I needed a colonoscopy the next day or a week later. Oh, God damn it, colonoscopy has never come up. Don't stress out about this. You don't have to feel guilty. He's taking care of that for the both of you. Sounds like he's taking care of that for all of us who are out there having the butt sex. All right, before we get to some response calls, here are some of your tweets. Juliet tweets, as per Dan Savage's advice, we hashtag fucked first before heading out for hubby's B-Day supper. Hashtag Savage Lovecast. Good for you, Juliet. Thanks for the shout out. My apologies to everyone for failing to mention in the run-up to Valentine's Day that everybody should fuck first. That's my advice, whether it's Valentine's Day or your wedding or just your regular old run-of-the-mill date night. Don't go out to eat and stuff yourself with lots of heavy food and wine and dessert and then go home expecting to get laid, because you're not going to get laid. You're going to go home in a food coma and fall asleep and be disappointed. Fuck first, build up an appetite, then go out to eat and drink and have dessert and then go home and crash guilt-free. Franco Pup tweets, interesting to hear about the idea from @FakeDanSavage on the latest hashtag Savage Lovecast about a mass dick pic reveal, amnesty purge style. You first, Dan. Hey, not just dick pics. I was talking about all sorts of sexy pics. Not just dick pics, also puss pics, also tit pics, also butt pics. But I'm shy. Anyone who's been to my Instagram account, as opposed to, say, my husband's Instagram account, will note that there are almost no pictures of me on my Instagram account. So I don't feel like I'm being a hypocrite, releasing lots of pictures of me, but not those pictures of me. I don't release really any pictures of me. I think that everyone who isn't shy about releasing their photos generally should go first, and then maybe I will be tempted to jump in as well. And finally, Edward Ariola tweets, @FakeDanSavage, I was listening to hashtag Savage Lovecast with the guy who's into his new doctor. I'd say no, hell no, don't hit on your therapist, doctors, or healthcare providers. It puts them at risk. Even if they wanted to, they could lose their license over it. Of course, something to bear in mind. Thank you for your tweets. If you want me to read your tweet on an upcoming installment of the Savage Lovecast, be sure to use the hashtag Savage Lovecast. And now some of your response calls, your second opinions, for callers from past shows.
Hi, Dan. I'm calling about the female caller in episode 642 who finally told her partner how much money she makes, and he was shocked at that number. I think you forgot to mention there's another thing that could happen. There's a lot of people out there, and my wife and I kind of had this talk when I got my latest job, who feel like they work so hard out there, and they see a number that someone else is making, and they just feel like no matter how hard they're going to work, they're never going to make that much money. And it, at some point, it just feels really hurtful, not about that other person, but just about society. Like, my wife is a social worker, basically, and she makes a fifth of what I do. We're a tech company. And it's like, there was this point in time when we talked about how much more money I was making, and she just kind of had the same expression on her face and kind of broke down crying, basically about the same topic. Like, she doesn't feel valued in not our relationship, but in society, based on how much money I make compared to her and others like me make compared to her and others like her. So that's one other take.
Hey, Dan, this is just a comment for the caller in episode 640 who had an erotic dream about her brother. I just thought she might like to know that this is so common. So there's a reference to it in a 2,500-year-old play, Sophocles' Oedipus the King, who it said, "You're not the first man to sleep with his mother in his dreams." Now, that's actually his mother saying that to him. She doesn't realize it at the time. But, I mean, if the ancient Greeks 2,500 years ago were talking about how common it was to sleep with family members in their dreams, I really wouldn't worry about it.
Hi, Dan, and the tech-savvy at-risk youth. Long-time listener and fan here, and I'm a medical student. I'm calling in reference to episode 642 about the man who has a runny nose every time he gives a blowjob, which you attributed to erectile tissues in his nose secreting precum. Yeah, no. A key part of the gagging reflex is excess production of saliva, as
anyone who's ever vomited knows you get that rush of saliva in your mouth before you yak. So what's likely happening here is as this guy is gagging on dick, all that excess saliva is going to the back of his throat. And it's either being pushed up into his nose and draining out, or he's swallowing it. So a natural solution to this problem is to swallow much more frequently while you're giving a blowjob, therefore preventing it from going up into the nose. Alternatively, this guy might just have congested sinuses. As he's leaning forward to give a blowjob, he's actually making it much easier for his maxillary sinuses to drain. And this could result in excess nasal discharge. So a natural solution to this problem would be to take a decongestant a few hours before giving blowjobs, or give blowjobs with your head in the vertical position. That is to say that a good old-fashioned face fucking might just be the thing that this guy needs. Happy dick sucking.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. This week, my Dirty Little Film Festival Hump is heading to the Bay Area. We are showing the very best of Hump in Oakland. This is a special showcase with some of our very favorite Hump films from the last 10 years of Hump. The new Hump Film Festival is also touring the country. The 2018 films. Go to humpfilmfest.com. for information about when Hump is coming to a city near you. Also coming to a city near you, me, Savage Love Live, Portland, Vancouver, Seattle, Denver, San Francisco, Chicago, Madison, Minneapolis, Toronto, and Somerville, Massachusetts. I am coming to you. Go to savagelovecast.com and click on events for dates and tickets to upcoming tapings of the Savage Lovecast in a city near you. Follow me on Twitter at FakeDanSavage. A big thank you again to Dr. Lucy Platt for joining us on the Lovecast. Follow the East London Project on Twitter at EastLNDProject. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian, and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy will all be back at you next week with an installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thanks for downloading.